From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Current Sports. I am your host, Matt Luckey, filling in for the beloved Al Martin. He is on vacation this week, hopefully enjoying this unseasonably cool weather, but definitely enjoyable weather. We'll be catching you up on everything in the sports world. We'll talk a little bit about the Home Run Derby last night and the upcoming All-Star Game tonight in Minneapolis. Lansing United gets to host the NPSL playoffs. Emmanuel Mudiay, not going to college, going straight to Europe. And Jimmy Graham gets a new deal. All that and more coming up on today's Current Sports. First of all, Alex, take it away with the Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Afternoon, sports fans. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Tuesday, July 15. In last night's MLB Home Run Derby, Oakland's Yoenis Cespedes earned the title as back-to-back champion. He outlasted Tony Bautista from the Blue Jays in the semifinals and then beat Cincinnati's Todd Frazier 9-1 in the final round. Frazier only had one home run in the semifinals to move past Giancarlo Stanton, who couldn't put one home run on the board. He's the first repeat Home Run Derby winner since Ken Griffey Jr. And Lansing United will host the first round of the NPSL playoffs, according to the announcement made yesterday on Impact Sports. Lansing United will play Minnesota United reserves at 7:30 p.m. Saturday after Quad Cities and Fort Pitt clash in the opener at 4 p.m. Winners from both matches will advance to play in the regional championship Sunday at 5 p.m. Larry Brown's biggest recruiting haul won't play a minute for Southern Methodist. Emmanuel Mudiay, believed by many to be a potential number one draft pick, has decided to play overseas instead of attending college. Mudiay stated in quotes given to Sports Illustrated that he made the decision in order to provide for his mother, whom he was tired of seeing, quote, struggle, end quote. Despite reports that his academics were in question, SMU had accepted him academically. In NFL news, the New Orleans Saints locked up one of their better receivers. Tight end Jimmy Graham tweeted this morning, quote, "It's official, I'm bleeding black and gold this morning," end quote. The deal is worth reportedly $40 million over 4 years with $21 million guaranteed. Over the last three seasons, Graham has caught more passes for more yards and touchdowns than any tight end in the game of football. And Germany's extra time win over Argentina in the World Cup final drew an estimated 26.5 million viewers as a U.S. record. The previous U.S. soccer record was 24 million, set during the 2010 final, and was matched during the U.S. vs. Portugal game earlier in the tournament. In Germany, over 34 million people watched the final, a German television record. In more unfortunate NFL news, former Lion Titus Young was arrested again for battery with serious bodily injury. He is held in custody at Los Angeles Correctional Facility with a bond of $105,000. In two seasons with the Lions, Young caught 10 touchdowns for 990 yards. Also, Wolverine offensive lineman Graham Glasgow was sentenced on Monday to fines, community service, and probation stemming back from a drunk driving charge on March 15th. Glasgow started all 13 games for the Wolverines last season at center. An SI.com sports writer called the MSU-Oregon football game the best non-conference game of the year. He went on to explain that Connor Cook and MSU would be a nice test for Oregon Heisman hopeful quarterback Marcus Mariota. Florida State and Notre Dame followed at number two. Clemson and Georgia came in at number three. LSU and Wisconsin landed the number four spot, and UCLA and Texas rounded out the top five. In golf, after Mo Martin took the Women's British Open, star golfer Tiger Woods will gear up and try to do the same. Woods shot a practice round yesterday as he comes back from back surgery. He has only played two rounds of competitive golf since March 31st. Tiger begins play at 9:04 a.m. on Thursday, teaming up with Henrik Stenson and Angel Cabrera. Target Field in Minneapolis is set to host the 85th All-Star Game, with the AL and NL duking it out for MLB supremacy and home field advantage in the World Series. St. Louis's Adam Wainwright will take the mound versus Seattle's King Felix, that is, Seattle's Felix Hernandez, as the starters in the Midsummer Classic. Tiger slugger Miguel Cabrera will bat cleanup for the AL. First pitch is set at 8 p.m. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Tuesday, July 15th. Time to send it back to Matt to start the show. The lines are now open.
Thank you, Alex. And again, welcome to another edition of Current Sports. I'm Matt Ludke, filling in for Al Martin. Alex Sharg is with me in the booth, on the ones and twos, any sort of, scenario for that situation. But we're going to be talking about a little bit of everything today. And we're opening up the phone lines now, 517-355-9527. And I think, it's only right that we start with the home run derby. Now, Alex, yeah. you and I made quite possibly the worst predictions for who would win the home run derby. Did they both get eliminated in the first round? I mean, Puig didn't even hit a home run. Now, for those at home, Alex just mentioned in the quick hit headliners, Yoenis Cespedes, he wins. He's the back-to-back champion, the first time since Ken Griffey Jr. So he wins back-to-back years, going away with it. I mean, 9-1 in the final round over Cincinnati's Todd Frazier. I mean, it was his to lose, really. We picked Puig, and I unfortunately picked Justin Morneau, thinking, guy coming home to, the city where he played for years, maybe having a feel-good story winning the home run derby. None of that happened.
Now, well, you weren't alone on that. I think Morneau was a very good pick, safe pick at home, his own ballpark where he hit many home runs. I like that pick a lot. So give yourself a little pat in the back, you along with many other people. Myself, I probably was the sole saint in Yasiel Puig. Didn't work out. But go on, Matt. I do have something to get off my chest about the home run derby.
About the home run derby. Now, they go to the new format where they have, five hitters from each league. The top three advance to the second round with the top one from each league getting a bye through that second round. Did you like the new format, or would you have liked to seen it go elsewhere? And I'm opening this up to callers too, because I actually have a different idea for what they should be doing in the home run derby. If you have an idea of how you would be setting up the home run derby, formatting this competition, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Alex, if you are Bud Selig, how are you going to improve the home run derby? Do you think it needs improving? Because,
yeah.
I mean, the rain hurt it last night, but
yeah, well, let me preface this, Matt, and talk about some action I saw on social media last night and also my own personal thoughts about the home run derby. Now, I said this on Twitter myself, and I've said this to you before, but the home run derby is one of my personal favorite events. I would put this in probably the top 5 or 10 best sporting events. Some people were up in antics about that with me. Some people thought that Berman sucks. It's a snooze fest. Go ahead and take a nap. And last night, I'd say that was a safe bet, because when you're watching the final round or the semifinal round of the NL and you're seeing a guy move on with one home run.
He won 1-0.
That was a snooze fest. And it made the rest of the home run derby, when it's getting to the late hours at 10, 11 at night, it made it look really bad. Now, I want to defend myself and say that looking back to past home run derbies, aside from this one, there was nothing more exciting in baseball than watching Bobby Abreu smack 30 home runs at Comerica, watching Bonds, regardless of his steroid mess, smack tons and tons of homers, watching the classic Maguire and Sosa back in 1998 and 1999. I mean, there are some classic home run champions and classic duels in Major League Baseball history. And the exciting part for me about the home run derby is seeing these kings of swats smack constant home runs back to back to back to back, 6-7 in a row, 400, 450 feet out of the park. For me, that's the most exhilarating part about the Home Run Derby. Not seeing who is going to move on to the next round, not seeing 9 versus 1, not 1 versus 0 in terms of the semifinals. It's seeing these power hitters, the David Ortizes of the world, the Mark McGuires of the world, hitting 20, 30 home runs in a round. And last night with the new format, you figured that seeing maybe 3 move on and not combining the home runs, it would give batters more of a chance to hit more home runs in a single round, if you follow me, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be maybe a little bit better to watch. And looking at the past home run derbies, I think that there needs to be a change, again, to the format.
I do, too. And, you know, it's just, I think I agree with you in that, you know, the moments where guys are just going bananas hitting homer after homer is much more exciting than really just seeing who wins, you know? It's those individual rounds in the home run derby is much more exciting than the competition as a whole, because it kind of gets watered down. Because like you said, you have guys who just go absolutely bonkers in round one and then don't end up winning the whole thing, when everybody knows, I mean, if you hit 26 homers in a round, I mean, that should be a wrap. It should be over. You win. I mean, give them the trophy. But I don't know. It's tough because I think, you know, when you see that happen and the guy doesn't win, it just seems like what a waste of time.
So you were talking about your alternative theory.
Let's
get right into it.
Okay, so I'm going to go back. You know, I remember as a kid, ESPN Classic used to air the original, like, Home Run Derby program from the 60s, where it was just 1v1, and that was it. And they hit as many as they could. They had, I believe, 9 outs, or 9 innings of 3 outs, and they just went back and forth to see who could hit more. I would kind of piggyback off that. I would take an element of that. I think what you need to do is have each league's home run derby representatives ranked 1 through 5. Just go by how many home runs they hit during the season to that point. So you have each league 1 through 5. Then, you know, the NL's number 1 would face the AL's number 5, and vice versa. Then you'd have 2 versus 4, and then the 3s would go at it. And then you just have a bracket. You know, I don't want, you know, everybody fighting against everybody in their own league. Well, I didn't get that at all. Why would you be competing against just the NL to start instead of just going against the AL? Isn't the whole thing about how the leagues are coming together and seeing who's better at what? So I just feel like having NL players eliminate other NL players is counterintuitive. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I feel like you match the leagues up. You have them go in a bracket. So let's say, you know, Cespedes goes against, Giancarlo Stanton, I guess. So they go against each other in round one, and whoever wins that moves along in the bracket.
Yeah, but then let's say it gets to the final round, and then 3 years, 4 years in a row, you get AL batters versus AL batters.
How do you figure
out the lopsidedness?
I am okay with that. If they're facing off against in the finals, great job. More power to them. That just means the AL has more home run hitters, or better home run hitters, at least the guys who are competing. Yeah, I don't want to see them taking each other out, weeding them out of the field immediately. If it's going to be AL versus AL, make it in the finals. Don't make it at the end, or don't make it at the beginning.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have anything in that would be a bad thing. You're right. I mean, more power to them. But I guess there's an aspect of baseball where you don't want all the best hitters to go to the AL. You don't want the AL, if you're Bud Selig, to be that lopsided because they have the DH. That kind of triggers all of those top-heavy hitters to go to the American League. So I can kind of see an aspect where Selig wants the NL to be there every year to show that the NL still has some spunk.
They'll still be there. They'll just be potentially eliminated early. I mean, at least we're seeing them compete. You know, they're still in it. They still have a chance to win. I mean, who knows? Maybe, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, he sneaks by in round one and then gets hot towards the end in his later rounds. But I just think the way they did it last night was just kind of, I know they're trying to quicken it you know, make it a little bit faster.
Did you like that? Did you like that with 7 outs opposed to 10?
Yes, definitely. 10 outs is an eternity, especially when guys are, you know, just taking pitch after pitch. I mean, gosh, I can't remember who it was a few years ago, but I mean, they would just be at the plate for a half hour. Just, you know, not swinging, waiting for their pitch. And I understand that, but that's the other thing about this setup. If you just have it 1v1, give them 5 outs. Give them something small. It might be a lower home run total. Maybe you go 10 outs or 7 outs for the final. But you can clip through these little matchups pretty quick if they only have 5 outs. And sure, you might get a 1-0 like you did last night, but you already had that anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's never a guarantee that guys are going to be hitting home runs. I kind of like my idea, and I know obviously it's because it's my idea, but it just seems like there's a better way to do this, and they just haven't found it yet. But you can tell they're searching, because obviously they're tweaking the formula this year. But I still think they haven't quite found that perfect format for the home run derby.
Yeah, no, I agree. And your idea has some good points in there. But until we see the snooze fest go away, it's going to be...
Did you enjoy Chris Berman?
Yeah, I enjoyed Chris Berman. I don't know why people are hating on Chris Berman too much. I don't know. Are you a Berman guy?
I'm really not a Berman guy. He has his place. I guess he fits better in baseball. I did always enjoy him as a kid with the NFL primetime highlights, the whops and the, you know, whatever he did. But
whoop.
too much Berman is, you know, way too much Berman.
Yeah, but what are they supposed to do? Switch off in the middle of the derby?
That's true. I guess, but you know. He's just such a big character. He's almost like Dick Vitale at this point, where his shtick is bigger and more important than what he's actually saying.
Yeah, well, he keeps people awake.
You know, he's just got to work his way into his catchphrases. Like Dick Vitale, you can guarantee he's going to say, you know, PTP or All-American Baby, all that stuff. Like, you know it's coming. And then when he says it, it's almost like it's recited. He's got it so ingrained in his memory. Once he starts down that tangent, it's a paragraph later, and then he finally stops talking.
Hmm.
And something could have happened on the court, and nobody knows what's going on because he's in the middle of his big speech. But with Berman, I don't know. He's an outsized character for sure. He brings some excitement to it, which you need, especially you needed last night. My gosh. But still, I can see why people don't like him. I can see definitely how he rubs people the wrong way. Listeners at home, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Let us know what you thought about the Home Run Derby, how you would potentially change it, what you would like to see in the future in the Home Run Derby. Maybe you want to see, you know, like kind of like the NBA's clamoring for with the dunk contest, where you have to have the best players do it. You don't just get guys who are able to pass on it and move on. Because I'm sure, you know, a healthy Miguel Cabrera would be right up there as one of the favorites for the Home Run Derby. Now, Alex, you say the Home Run Derby is one of your 5 or 10 favorite events in sports. Among the kind of all-star game festivities, is that your number one?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if you're comparing it to the slam dunk contest, I think that's more glitz and glamour. But I feel that the home run derby, there's just so many more competitors. There's so many more rounds. For a dunk, it's you get your 5 seconds of an awesome dunk and it's gone. I mean, the home run, it sits in the air for 10 seconds. You see how far it goes. There's the anticipation that even when the ball's in flight, it keeps going. And I feel like I'm more of a salesman for the home run derby. But, I mean, I don't know. I just think that it's a little more exciting.
It is exciting. It's got the history to it. I just think for something they do every year, it needs to be absolutely foolproof. It needs to be a perfect format, and I just don't think it's there yet.
Yeah, fair.
I just don't think it's there. Okay, now let's move on quickly.
One more point about the derby.
Go for it. Defend your derby.
I'm not even defending it, but I don't know what your thoughts are on some of the stories that come out of the derby, and there are a lot, and some include who's pitching to the batter.
Right.
And a lot of them are father-son combinations and former pitching coaches, and you see all these profiles of who's pitching and how that's going to affect the champion. And I was wondering if you thought that has any unfair advantage in anything.
I can definitely see how you know, a hitter and a pitcher could have a certain relationship and that could aid in it. So are you maybe hinting at the suggestion that they should go to like a pitching machine?
Yeah.
And all be on a level playing field?
Yeah, because I don't know. I feel that if it's someone you're originally accustomed to, I mean, there are some of those guys that had, that weren't, they sometimes in past years, they choose someone honorable. So maybe they're not used to pitching to, but some future or MLB great, some Hall of Famer. Some years it's father, son. I mean, that's kind of, that's 20, 30 years of pitching and catching to father, sons, you know? So I feel that it can be somewhat unfair given the experience of whoever's pitching.
I can see that too. Actually, you know what? I'm going to put that into my idea. They all got to use a pitching machine.
Okay.
And plus, like it's like, you know, batting practice. Guys are smoking those balls anyway. It's not like they're not going to be capable of hitting home runs on a pitching machine. I mean, you can, you know, you dial it up to a certain speed for everybody, and they all just, you know.
Right. And then there are some guys who have zero home runs and that don't get the pitch in the right place. A lot of guys are hitting home runs that are sometimes too low, sometimes outside, and a pitching machine would just solve all that. It's all fair.
Right.
You don't need the human eye. You don't need a human pitcher. It's going to be at the same place every time.
I mean, I'm sure Giancarlo Stanton would have loved a pitching machine last night.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what he's blaming.
Or Donaldson, too.
I mean, that's the thing. When you have, you know, guys hitting one home run in the finals, that's disappointing. You have to be disappointed if you're, you know, Major League Baseball. This is your summer showcase. Your big midsummer classic, and nothing happened. I mean, it goes out with a whimper. I mean, I know Cespedes hit 9, and he definitely dominated the competition, but how much fun is it to watch one guy hit, you know, an intermediate amount of home runs, and then everybody else struggle to hit any?
Yeah, it was horrible.
It was a blunder for sure. Now, do you think, you know, do you think with Minnesota being the host and, you know, kind of unforeseen inclement weather coming through, do you think that will maybe influence their decision for future All-Star games?
Yeah.
So they'll be just warm weather city?
I mean, it doesn't help that it's a pitcher's park,
right,
too. So I think that was something. The inclement weather, I don't think that really affects anything. I think that players are used to it by now. But I think that most home run derbies should be held in hitters' parks.
I
think that adds a little bit more fun to it.
Now, what if they go to an even smaller park, like, well, I guess they couldn't do that.
What, New Yankee Stadium?
Well, no, I'm not even saying a pro park. I'm saying, you know, they have the All-Star game in Minnesota.
Mm.
That's fine. What if they go to some local stadium? It's going to be obviously much smaller.
Yeah, but then they can't hold the seats.
Yeah, but you could just have people, you know,
stand on the grass,
setting up lawn chairs outside the park trying to catch home.
It'd be a mess, Mac.
It would be a total mess.
But I see where you're going.
It's just something. It's
so it's a neutral site.
It's got to get better than that. It's got to be better than that. That was disappointing for sure. Let's hope tonight lives up to you know, the esteem of the All-Star game, and let's get into that just a little bit before we take our first break. Who do you have tonight? NL, AL?
Yeah. Well, at the Home Run Derby, you know, the AL obviously typically winning that one with obviously stronger hitters given the kind of league, but
right.
I thought the NL last night had a stronger roster for hitters. I thought they had a lot of guys on that squad that just were big names on the NL. But tonight, I think the AL will win. I think they are just, I mean, we saw the NL a few years back have a big win, stop the streak. But I think that the AL, with Miguel Cabrera, the best hitter in the game, batting cleanup, you've got, I think, better pitching as well in the AL. I think that overall, I think the AL is just going to win. I think they just have a better team. As simple as that sounds and as amateur as that sounds, they just have a better team.
I kind of have to agree. I think they've got a better team from hitting to pitching. I mean, the whole nine yards, I just think they're a better club. Obviously, things can go nuts in an All-Star game. Anything can happen. I mean, what, JV went and started the All-Star game a few years ago and gave up like 5 runs.
Yeah, I mean let's...
Anything can happen. Like, one bad inning and, you know, it's over.
Well, let's look who's starting. I mean, who's the better starter, Wainwright or Felix? I'd say Felix.
Felix, yeah. You got to go with Felix.
Who's the better cleanup hitter? I'd say Cabrera. So, for
Over
me...
anybody.
You look at any position, I think the AL has just...
Now, what about shortstop? Yeah.
That's, I don't know.
That's where that argument kind of goes out the window.
Well, second base, Cano.
Right.
I mean, we can go around the diamond.
That's true.
Outfield.
That's true.
I don't have some good outfielders. That's another argument.
Right. Poor Jeff Samardzija.
I
can't stop thinking about him. All this stuff.
Even Victor, though, too, from the Tigers. I mean, you got to feel him. A guy who came off a rough injury last year, and you figure this would be the year where he redeems himself. He does. He lives up to his contract and his name and gets injured right before, too. So.
Right before. But I guess if you're going to miss anything, it might as well be the All-Star game.
Right.
You know? You're not costing your club anything by missing the All-Star
game.
But
they're
probably happy.
Yeah, but Jeff Samardzija, you're right. I mean, a guy who gives up football would have been a great football player.
Probably.
Probably would have been.
He was fantastic at Notre Dame.
A solid two, maybe number one receiver on a team.
Absolutely a solid. He was a great possession receiver.
Mm.
Gives up football, goes to play baseball, goes to the Cubs.
Oh.
Has to be, you know, mire in obscurity for five years or whatever it is.
That's a good top five we should do soon is top five best switch sport players.
Ooh.
Guys who started in one sport,
right,
left it, and were just great in that other sport.
The half Bo Jacksons.
Mm.
I like that. They switch sport allegiances.
Would Samardzija be one of them? Right now?
I mean, is he officially an all-star? Like, in his Wikipedia page, would they say all-star pitcher Jeff Samardzija?
I don't know. I'm wondering in the MLB record books if they'd say that.
Because he loses it on a technicality.
I'd say they would. Would Victor Martinez be there? Probably.
Yeah, but he's an injury. Well, yeah, I guess you'd have to say it.
And Samardzija just got traded. Yeah, I think it still counts.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, off the top of my head, I mean, he's got to be somewhat up there.
Mm.
Then you could be like Tony Gwynn played college basketball, and then he went on to be, you know, one of the best hitters ever.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, he's certainly going to be there. You can't forget, gosh, Tony Gonzalez played basketball at Cal, goes on to be the best tight end in the history of the NFL. Gosh, I'm coming up with a couple. Allen Iverson.
Started at football.
You could do Antonio Gates.
Yeah.
Play basketball at Kent State.
Local. Detroit.
Local. Oh, boy, there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them, Alex. That is a good top five. Well, maybe we'll have that be
an impromptu?
Next week's top. We could do an impromptu.
You won't be here next week, though.
I know.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, Matt, who you've heard constantly throughout the years, co-hosting with Al, is departing next week.
I am moving.
On a long flight. Long drive,
long flight, longer drive. I am moving to San Francisco. But I will still be calling in from time to time, so don't freak out yet. Don't pull the car over and let out a couple tears just yet. I'll still be around. It just won't be every single day. But yes, this is my last week. Al, karma and everything aligned, and the cosmos aligned, rather, and I get to host in my last week on the show. It's a good way to go out, I have to say. Okay, let's take our first break. Enough of this sappy stuff. First break. Please stay tuned. More current sports back after this. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am Matt Ludke. With me today is Alex Sharg. We just got done talking about the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. We're moving on to golf. That's right, everybody.
Yeah, you golf a lot, Matt? Or?
I've been golfing a little bit this summer, actually. I am really terrible. I forgot how bad I was at golf, and I forgot how frustrating golf is when you can, you know, really hit the ball well for a couple shots. You get to the green, and everything just goes down the drain.
Yeah, 3, 4, 5 putt. Yeah. Are you one of those guys?
Well, I don't want to say 5 putt, but I am a frequent 3 putter. I'll say that.
Mm.
It's disappointing, but I've actually taken to putting off of 1 foot. For some reason, it works. I look like a fool doing it, but hey, whatever gets the job done.
Yeah.
That's my mantra out on the golf course. Okay, we're talking about the British Open, and of course we're talking about Tiger Woods. Al's going to be really angry that he's not here for this discussion because he loves talking about Tiger Woods and what he means for golf, but, you know, he had to go on vacation. So give us a call. Your thoughts on Tiger this weekend, his chances. Will you be watching him? 517-355-9527. And one of the most interesting things leading up to the British Open, or the Open, is the fact that ESPN, and specifically ESPN3, will be airing a personal Tiger feed. It will cover no other golfers, just one Eldrick Woods. Now, Alex, this is a different direction, and to me, it's kind of that ultimate test, because we've debated, I don't know how many times on this show, about the importance of Tiger Woods to golf and its fan interest in general, and also just how much the sport suffers when he's not playing. I think this is the ultimate test. Now, I know, you know, the regular ESPN feed will be showing Tiger Woods anyway, but what if, just as a crazy experiment, they go with just the leaders, not necessarily Tiger Woods. In fact, they ignore Tiger Woods on the main feed. You get no Tiger at all, but on ESPN3, which is, you know, you can stream it on a bunch of devices and all that stuff, watch it on your computer. On ESPN3, they only show Tiger. So you have all Tiger and no Tiger. Do you think if they did that, the all Tiger channel would get better ratings than the no Tiger channel?
I don't think it would. As much as people love Tiger Woods, and as much as the anticipation for him to come back is great, I think most people who watch golf, surprisingly, I mean, there's a good chunk of people who watch just for Tiger Woods, but I'd say that there's still a majority that watch golf for golf, and I think that most of the people would still be tuned for the quote-unquote unbiased coverage and would probably be interested in seeing the Henrik Stensons and the Angel Cabreras and the Sergio Garcias and all the other, and Phil and all the other top golfers. So I'd say no, but I do think that if people did tune to Tiger Woods on ESPN3, that the moment he starts to do bad, they turn him off. And that's the thing about Tiger, is the people that watch Tiger are just those fair weather fans that just want to see someone good.
Right.
I think that if Tiger Woods just does poorly, the moment he gets plus five or plus, they're turning him off.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no guarantee that he will do well. I mean, he's coming off a big injury. He's missed most of the season. It just seems like for a guy who, you know, and I understand he's used to pressure, obviously. He's, you know, the most famous golfer in the world. To come back off that kind of injury and to just be like, yep, let's do it. Let's jump right into the British and have my own personal feed. I mean, that just seems like too much. Why wouldn't they wait until he is, you know, really competing for titles? Like, what if they just said on Sunday, if he's competing, let's just go all Tiger all the time on ESPN3? Why wouldn't they do that with anybody for the leaderboard? And I know usually they try and show most of the, you know, the final pairing or whatever, but why wouldn't you just have one sub channel devoted to just the top guy?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm talking about revolutionizing golf coverage as we know it. But ESPN's already looking that way. I mean, with an all-Tiger cam. And I know he's a bigger personality than the sport almost, and he's a more recognizable brand than certainly anybody else, but I feel like you said, people want to watch golf for golf. A large majority of people who love watching golf will watch no matter who's playing.
Now, would you say the same thing about people wanting to watch a LeBron, or some people watch football just to see, I don't know. Do you think there are people that just watch to see Johnny Football? Do you think there are people that just watch NHL to see Sid the Kid?
Kind of, yeah. I think there's always that subset of fans that just want to follow, you know, the biggest and best, and that's it. I don't know if, you know, I particularly agree with that line of thinking. But I acknowledge their existence. There are certainly people out there who will do nothing but be the front runner, follow that top dog team. I mean, look at how many fans the Heat had and are now losing since LeBron left. I mean, I feel like you can just look at, you know, season ticket sales for the Heat and be like, wow, yeah, he did have a huge impact there. And he certainly did. I mean, he's the most electrifying player of his generation and the best player of his generation. So that one makes sense, but I don't know. I just feel like people want to watch the guys who are competing for the title more so than just a big name.
Right.
I think at the end of the day, people want to watch people win or you know, try and win. If Tiger is, like you said, five shots back, who cares? I mean, are people really going to be watching him on 17 when he's six strokes back, you know, has no chance to contend?
Mm-hmm.
You might be missing the cut even. Who's going to care about that?
There are a few that will watch to see what Tiger does. I feel that there are fans out there because we've seen Tiger do some things before. We've seen him throw clubs. We've seen him stomp. We've seen him swear. So I think that there are a few fans that would watch to see his reaction on some holes. But you're right. I think that most of the people would just tune to see who's competing. I think golf has you checked, I don't know, 15 years ago. It's just Tiger. People are watching golf to see Tiger. I think the sport of golf has truly evolved, and I think that people are watching golf to see the Phils and the Sergios and the Angels and et cetera.
Adam Scott and all. Yeah. You know, there's so many guys now. I think you're right, and I think even though there are still that group of people who just watch golf to watch Tiger, I do think the sport has evolved past that. I agree. And I hope it does for the sport's sake. It needs it. It does need another guy to come out and be just absolutely dominant, though. Mm. Because that certainly draws interest.
Same people with tennis. I mean, I'd argue that you're talking about sports with a couple main characters. I'll get to that call. I think tennis is the same way.
Yeah, but tennis, at least you have those big rivalries. I mean, Tiger and Phil, to a certain extent, were back and forth for a little while, but, you know, tennis, you have, you know, Djokovic, you have Nadal versus Federer forever. You have Andy Murray coming out winning Wimbledon and stuff like that. So at least they have a little bit of that, you know, certain class at the top, and there are peers there. It's not just Tiger head and shoulders above everybody.
Yeah.
And I think he almost was, you know, he almost hurt the game in a way just because he was so dominant. All right, let's get to a caller. We have Michael on the line. Michael, I understand you want to talk a little All-Star game.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about the team that was picked by the fans. The fans did a pretty good job this year. You know, that's one thing about the technology. It really helped out that the fans are really got more information about the players and they not just voting their favorites. They voting for the people who are in be on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just the amount of information and social media's reach, it's so much easier to vote now.
Yes, it is. I want to talk about Target Field. You know, for years and years, Minnesota was one of those cities that was going to be contracted. They was talking about moving the team, and they finally, the powers that be, the state and local government, built them a beautiful ballpark there. What if these owners, like they're having a situation in Oakland right now with the A's and everything, what if these owners who own these sports teams, you know, just know how to work and keep working, and, you know, you don't have to threaten to move or whatever? I'd just like to have your opinion on that because I think Target Field is a beautiful field. It's better than what we have built in Detroit. I just take it off the end. Thanks for letting me talk.
Thank you, Michael. And Target Field is a fantastic venue. And, you know, usually that's how they get these All-Star games is what's the latest and greatest stadium. And Target Field is obviously recent. And in terms of Minnesota, I mean, they were threatening to move. The Metrodome was well past its prime. I mean, it's basically as if, like, the Lions were still playing in the Silverdome or something like that. I mean, that facility, you know, served its purpose.
It was
a great facility.
They had rain sink through the top.
Exactly. I mean, it had to go. It had to go. I mean, and they had Vikings games there. They used to have Minnesota Golden Gophers games there. They had Twins games there. I mean, it was a multi-purpose facility, absolutely. But it was time for something new. I do agree with you that, you know, the owners sometimes holding cities hostage, trying to get people to vote to build a new stadium and basically voting for the, or, you know, having the citizens more or less pay for it is ridiculous. And, you know, you've seen it in, more so in the NBA recently with teams threatening to move. I mean, ever since Clay Bennett bought the Supersonics and moved them to Oklahoma City, Seattle is just kind of there waiting for a franchise to move there. And so you have these owners who, you know, see that possibility and use it as leverage over cities to build new stadiums, which really only serves them, the owners, because they get somebody else to foot part of the bill and they reap all the rewards. I mean, granted, it'll create jobs for sure. A new stadium creates jobs and certainly it attracts, you know, tourism. But at the end of the day, I mean, the bottom line, the guy whose bottom line is seeing the greatest, you know, rewards from that is the owner themselves.
Yeah, but at the same time,
they're the ones who orchestrate the whole thing.
Yeah, but a big part of what you're missing is they have to have the talent too. We've seen so many times, time and time again, where new stadium goes up or a team relocates, aka the Bobcats, they get a whole new look and whole new stadium, whole new city sometimes, and the team isn't there, they can't sell the seats. So I think that as much as it's possible, it would create some jobs. And like you were alluding to, Matt, it may or may not be in the best interest, depending on who's funding or the owner. You just have to look at how quickly a team can form to be good and prestigious.
Yeah, I can see that. And the Bobcats are a rough example. The poor Bobcats. Even though, I mean, they're finally showing signs of life, and now they're going to be the Hornets again, which I do think is a great move. And I think they're gonna just be a huge franchise in terms of merchandise because all that stuff's coming back. I hope they start those starter jackets.
Bring back the Mashburn jerseys.
They got to bring back those jackets. Those starter jackets were classic. People still love them to this day. They would sell like absolute hotcakes if they reproduced them for the new age Charlotte Hornets. But we actually have another caller. We're going to change things up again. Go back to golf. Jim, you are on the line.
Yeah. I was just curious. Were they going to show all of Tiger Woods' shots, and then when he's walking the fairway and waiting to putt and that, they'd show other people? Or was it just on Tiger Woods walking the fairway, waiting to putt, waiting for his, taking his warm-up shots and such?
Now, I'm reading it right now. Now, it says, should he miss the cut, they will follow other players.
But I mean,
in between shots when he's just walking the fairway?
Yeah.
I think it's all Tiger.
I mean, with Tiger walking the fairway, I don't think would be more interesting than watching somebody else knocking down a 30-foot putt or so. And I was just curious.
No, well, yeah, no, I totally agree, Jim, and I'm reading right here. With the all-Tiger coverage, you're stuck watching him walk to shots, talking with his caddy, and lining up putts. I mean, you might be able to, I'm sure there'll be some gifs of him, like, picking his nose or something out on the course. Who wants to watch that?
Yeah, I would think that there might be people that would want to see every one of his shots, but then cut to other people while the other stuff's happening. Anyway, I was just curious. Thank you.
I totally agree. Thank you for your call, Jim, and he makes a good point. I mean, you know, you're watching him walk.
Now, we've seen it before in the larger golf coverage where most of the coverage is on him. You
right.
do see him walk the fairway.
And you still see almost every one of his shots.
Yeah, but they do cut away at some points. I feel with this Tiger coverage, instead of it just being a one-cam live stream of every move, because walking the fairway, that's 5-10 minutes of just plain, single-viewed Tiger Woods walking.
Boring.
And I feel that in between, there have to be some ads. I imagine the revenue they're putting into this has to be somewhat, luxurious and something that is awe-inspiring for any company to participate with. So you figure there has to be some cutaways in there, I would guess. I mean, when you're walking the fairway, sometimes they'll have multiple views. They'll get views of the trees. They'll show the leaderboard. They have to show the leaderboard here to see how Tiger's matching up. So I still think that there will be cutaways.
I'm sure there will be cutaways, and I'm sure you'll see, 15 replays of every shot as he, throughout most of that walk. But like you said, I mean, he might have to be waiting for his playing partner to shoot his next shot. It's ridiculous. I feel like it's just too much, Tiger. And honestly, to do it for the opening rounds is so crazy. I guess I could understand it if he was in contention. If we're going into Sunday and he's right there, sure, have it be one day of the tournament. Don't have it be the whole tournament. Nobody's going to watch that. And I know you have to seek it out to get to it, but even to have it available is ridiculous. And it, I feel like I'd be a little bit disrespected if I was any other golfer, because this is a guy who's coming off an injury. He's not really expected to win this tournament. I mean, he's just trying to get healthy. And even though, you know, everything he's said so far says, you know, I believe I can win, and I've won rounds when I've won tournaments and majors specifically when I'm injured, but come on.
Yeah.
I mean, the sport is bigger than just Tiger, I would hope.
Now, along with the sport being bigger than Tiger, I want to ask you when we get back from the break one more question about Tiger Woods, and then a big question about the Detroit Tigers.
Okay.
One that has to do with this All-Star break in particular.
Whew. All right. Quite a teaser. All right. Let's hit that second break. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. Current Sports back after this. Welcome back to Current Sports. It is Top 40 Tuesday. Thank you for that, Alex. That will be stuck in my head for the rest of the afternoon. Who is that even by? Do you know?
I think the group there is Magic.
Magic?
Magic. The song is Rude, I know.
Right. I know that. Trust me. I definitely know the song is Rude.
And now, ESPN, why do you have to be so rude with the Tiger views?
Why do they?
I think it's absurd.
There's no room for it in this coverage. It just seems like, you know, people are going to watch the especially the British Open or the Open Championship. People are going to watch that to watch good golf, watch a locale they don't normally get to see, certainly in America. I don't know. To have it all Tiger all the time seems a little overboard to me. Okay, we got another caller. Dave, you're talking Tiger and the Tigers. You're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Dave.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Tiger Woods all the time. I mean, he's been gone, and that's the sole reason why you're going to get this type of coverage. Yeah, there's going to be some cutaways to commercials as he's walking some of the fairways, but listen, Tiger Woods drives golf, and is it disrespectful? Well, it's been disrespectful since he turned pro. But so what? It's Tiger Woods. People want to see what he's doing. They want to see his swing, if he's going to tweak his back. They want to know, since he's been gone, what's going on with Tiger. So that is why that they're doing this single coverage, I think. Also, I just hope that Verlander, after this rest, regroups and although his last outing was a great outing, I just hope that this break allows Verlander to refocus, because we cannot win without him. We cannot win without him. So I'm looking forward to see how, after the break, how he gets back going on and gets his groove back on the mound. That's all I have.
All right, thank you, Dave. Now, you talk about Tiger Woods and how that's all, the end-all, be-all in golf, and to a certain extent that's true, but was there any problems with the coverage they had before?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you were missing anything.
Mm. Well, the only problem that I'd say, and this is what I was going to talk about after we came back from that break, was the only problem I had with the Tiger Woods coverage before was that you would just simply miss Phil Mickelson's shot sometimes.
Right.
Simply, you'd miss a Phil Mickelson 16th hole shot, and you'd miss some crucial shots of whoever the top golfer or whoever's in the top five. You're missing some key birdie putts. You're missing literally the play-by-play of how the tournament ends up. So the only problem I had before with Tiger Woods' coverage, with when he was on the main channel, was that I'd miss Adam Scott's birdie to tie up sometimes. And that's disappointing if you're a golf fan. So With that, I like that switch. And with Dave, with what he's talking about with Tiger Woods, I see that.
I can see that too. I guess I almost would enjoy it, like I said earlier, if they have the Tiger sub channel and then just don't show him on the main channel unless he is in contention. I mean, if he's four strokes back, you know, I get that, you know, the numbers don't lie and people love Tiger and he brings in viewers and all that stuff. But come on, at a certain point, have a little integrity, PGA.
Yeah, well,
get this stuff in line. And you know, it just seems like it's too much too soon for Tiger.
Yeah.
And Dave makes a good point. It is his big return. Mm-hmm. It's this return to form. People want to see how he does. I just feel like people can do that in small enough doses that it's not just, you know, overboard. I think this is overboard.
Yeah.
That's the only problem. I don't have a problem with them focusing on Tiger. I have a problem with them devoting an entire channel to Tiger.
Good way to wrap it up. Now,
it's too much.
Now, Dave's second comment, and this was what I was alluding to before we hit the break, is I have a big Detroit Tigers question, and the number to call in, because I'm sure there will be plenty of chatter on this, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. With the All-Star break, and this is what Dave just answered. Dave was talking about that the Tigers really need Justin Verlander to come back and be back to regular form. Now, with the second half of the season, what do the Tigers really need? Is it a trade? Do they need a relief pitcher? Do they need a permanent closer? Does Joe Nathan, is he not doing the job right now? Do the Tigers really need Verlander to come back to form? That's what Dave thinks. Now, Matt, what do you think the Tigers really need the most?
I kind of agree with Dave in that they need a healthy Verlander. And, you know, Miguel Cabrera came out today and talked about how he's still not 100%. And he said Verlander isn't either. And that's why they both kind of struggled a little bit this first half of the season. But Verlander has struggled to a much more severe degree than Cabrera has. I mean, Cabrera is still arguably the best hitter in baseball. He's still right up there. Certainly the best hitter on the team. Verlander is no longer the ace of that pitching staff. Max Scherzer is.
Well,
without a doubt.
Look, there's what, 180 games to a season?
162. Right.
Now, Verlander pitches once every five.
Yep.
So you break that in half, so you've got what, 81 games left? 81 divided by five, you're looking at about, what?
16
games of Verlander pitching. And for me, Matt, I disagree because I don't think 16 wins would... Don't get me wrong, 16 wins is great, but even if Verlander won half of those, if he won 8 of 16, which is probably reasonable, I would expect 8 wins from Verlander out of 16. I don't think that is going to be determinant, 8 games, of how big their division gap would be.
I guess I can see that. I just think going forward, you need him to be rounding into top form when the playoffs come around. Because that's when it really matters, and that's when you really need two absolute lockdown pitchers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reason the Tigers have been as successful as they have been in the playoffs. It's because they have great starting pitching, and he is vital to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't just do it with one.
Now, his last game against Kansas City, I think we saw signs of return. I mean, 6 scoreless innings, the 7th inning. I thought maybe personally he could have been pulled a little earlier. Sure, it was a big inning, but Kroll let off a little hit. You know, Albuquerque came in there, let off a hit to Infante that opened the gap. I still think that there are bigger concerns than Verlander. I think the closer role is the biggest. Yeah, Nathan has shown signs of life.
He's settled down a little bit as the year's gone on.
But that was the whole reason why the Tigers lost in the World Series years back.
That's true, and why they lost in the ALCS last year.
Mm.
I mean, the bullpen is and probably will always be, it might as well be the Detroit Lions secondary, in that it will always be the Achilles heel of the club.
But it's not the bullpen, Matt. It's a simple
closer. Just the closer.
Even though, closer.
I mean, you just said, I mean, Kroll came in and let up a run. You know, Albuquerque, I mean, it seems like when things go bad for the Tigers' bullpen, it is like a virus that spreads through everyone they have in there. everybody comes in and gives up runs. I mean, for some reason, when that unit is struggling, the entire unit is struggling. I mean, and sure, Nathan has had a couple games, and most of them earlier in the season, where, you know, everybody's shutting everything down, and then he comes in and gives up the lead, and they lose. But I feel like lately, when those, you know, off-the-rails games happen with the bullpen, it's been a group effort, absolutely, and in the worst way, a group effort. So I can see where you're coming from, but at the same time, you know, would I like to see them maybe make a deal and solidify the bullpen and maybe get that lockdown closer that you're talking about? I just don't know if it's in the cards.
Well,
who would they go get?
Well, I know there were some talks back, I've heard it over the last few months, of Soria, Joaquin Soria, being one of the guys that they could trade after, be a piece of a trade bait for them. But, I mean, we talked about this earlier in the week, but the only guy that is tempting for a team is Nick Castellanos.
Right, and the Tigers are not trading him.
Mm. So, I don't know if maybe, I mean, I don't think you can trade Suarez right now either, because he is the fill-in role for Iglesias either. Because that's another piece that I'd say is tempting for a team. So yeah. Either you're trading away draft picks, you're trading away some pitcher in Toledo that we don't really know too much about, but you're right. I don't know what would be a trade bait for Joaquin Soria.
Yeah, and you know, as far as maybe giving out some minor league prospects, if I'm the Tigers, I'd do that in a heartbeat. I'm trying to win now. The window is closing. Cabrera's not getting any younger. Victor Martinez isn't getting any younger. Justin Verlander's not.
Who knows if Martinez is even returning or Scherzer?
Right. I mean, you gotta. Exactly. So why not go for it? Do what you gotta do.
Yeah. And I was listening to the Huge Show yesterday, and Tony Paul was on, Tigers beat writer, talking about whether Scherzer not signing the deal means it's a done deal, whether that means he's not returning, or there's still a slim possibility that Scherzer can return. And Paul went on to say, well, it's not impossible, but the fact that they haven't came to a deal right now, in wake of a year that is a long-term contract, which guarantees him security, that is a bad sign. So you're looking at Scherzer not returning. I don't think Victor Martinez will return. I imagine he might want to go somewhere and try to get some top dollar, being on a top-heavy team. So I don't know. Who do you see returning, Matt? I can't see anyone.
I guess it depends on how they do now, because I don't think, you know, let's say hypothetically the Tigers win the World Series this year. I feel like it is awfully tough if you are Max Scherzer to walk away from the team you just won a World Series with. Mm. I think that is tough. And that kind of speaks to the point we're making. Push all your chips into the center of the table. Go for it. You're right there. They are right there. They have been for years. Just go for broke. I mean, I understand that you don't want to have a rebuilding process after this potentially, and certainly it could backfire, but when you have a chance to win a title, you make any move you can to get there.
That's the thing, is I'd say the same thing about the Wings. Is it makes sense. Throw all your chips. You got 23 straight playoff appearances, but I think that there's something about playing in Detroit that just turns people off.
I don't know. Mike Ilitch is willing to spend every penny. I say you go for it.
I want to continue this tomorrow, though.
Yeah, let's do that. We didn't even get to Top 5 Tuesday. Who cares? No. Who cares? Okay, thank you, everyone, for listening to today's Current Sports. Thank you to Alex Shard for producing Behind the Booth. I am Matt Ludke. We will be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Tune your dials. We'll be back. Until then, have a great, safe, happy evening.